Thank everybody for hanging in there for the final day, and I hope everybody found value in what we did this week. I really enjoyed the presentations, and I think everybody did a good job. Basically, we're just going to breeze through this morning's session. We got four papers, and we're going to kick off here and hopefully close it out 10 o'clock. Our first presenter is Dr. Joseph again. And he's going to talk about hydraulic excavators versus rope shovels, and he's promised to keep this in 25 minutes. How about a warm welcome for Tim?
I'm sorry you guys have to listen to me again. The original intention was that one of my guys, Mark Curley, would come and do this presentation. Fortunately, he got dragged up to the Diavik diamond mine. He's pulling tests up there right now, so I said I would pinch hit. So presentation I've got is based off something that was done a couple of years ago. Are we up and running? Oh, wonderful. There we are. So John Samut and I were here in 2013. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. And Steve kind of put us together to do a double act, which we've since then done a couple of other places around the world. And it's had, I would say, mixed reviews, probably because of John's performance, not mine. Rodion and Mark are two people that have gone through my master's PhD program at the university. Rodion is a student, came in from Russia, spent a lot of time with Komatsu Mining Germany, as well as Joy Global, and so he had a wealth of knowledge around machine performance. And John and I took advantage of him terribly. We tapped his knowledge, we drained his brain, and we managed to pull together a database through his contacts more than ours around the world, particularly in Russia and Europe, which we had very little information on. And we added it to our own database of information and costs, availabilities, production for machines across North America and South America. So back in 2013, John and I went head to head. We actually decided to have a, you know, one time only, winner takes all fight on stage. Which I think there were no winners, although John claims he wins and every time. Just so you know, John now works for me, and so he's got to behave himself. However, I walked into a... Well, you know, saying I walked into a classroom the other day with John, and the first thing I got was verbal abuse. And so, you know, I was on a losing battle from that point. John's very good at the verbal abuse. So we decided back in 2013 to compare ultra-class, and we looked at an ultra-class shovel and an ultra-class excavator. And we decided to do some direct comparisons. And just to remind people who are there at that conference, and also people who are new to this one, we actually did a direct specific energy comparison. How much energy per unit ton? Now, we got these numbers directly from the power draw. We got it knowing the efficiencies of the systems, and we had some notions of what the machine was working in, so it was similar environments. And overall, although the hydraulic excavator was pulling 76 tons payload average per bucket load, and the rope shovel was pulling 119 tons, it was actually overfilling for the density of the material. One was taking 23 megajoules, which was the rope shovel on average, and this was measured over several hundred cycles. And the other one, the hydraulic excavator, was pulling 14.7 megajoules. Both give identically the same specific energy. And when we looked at this, we hadn't realized that we'd really just confirmed what we already knew. This is just the power and the energy it takes to dig a specific blasted material. It doesn't matter what machine you use. This is the impact of what is felt in the face. So this energy rating, this specific energy, is directly related to the diggability of the material and how well it's been fragmented and blasted. That's all it is. There's nothing else. So the machine itself, what we did in this by doing a specific energy calculation was we took this out. This is more of a reflection of the material you're digging and the amount of energy it takes to dig. So it is a direct reflection of the blast quality. And that was something I want to bring up maybe at the end of this presentation, where we go next with that. We also looked at operating and maintenance costs, and we pulled these out of several databases that were proprietary to a number of different manufacturers, and we neutralized it so that no one knew where it came from. But we did an average of what the costs were for hydraulics versus rope shovels in a specific size class, and we picked the ultra size class. And we ended up with this chart, and it showed that our operating and maintenance costs overall for the hydraulic excavator was far bigger than for the rope shovel. This did not take into account the operating conditions or how the machine was being used. So we had no knowledge of what the hydraulic excavator was doing, whether it was actually in a production mode, whether it was actually just picking out rocks, if it was just separating layers, if it was working in interburden or overburden. We didn't have that knowledge of this. So we had some information missing. So at that time, we pulled out an overall cost, life cost of machine, and we projected over the full life for one of these rope shovels that we had. So over a 25-year period. So we had a 25-year status on. It was basically, you can think what it is, it's basically a 4100A. That's all we had at that time, over 25 years. And then the hydraulic, we found a hydraulic that was very similar, and we started projecting. We had at least 9 years on hydraulic. So we said, let's just project it forward and see where that would be. And overall, the total cost of ownership was equivalent to a difference in availability between the two machines of 12%. So if we reduce that cost down to availability or production equivalent, it was 12% availability difference, or $75 million representing about 10 years worth of production for the hydraulic excavator. So that was the difference we saw. Okay, this is over the total life. Overall, you have to remember that the rope shovel is deteriorating its availability far faster than the rope shovel, than the hydraulic excavator. But the hydraulic excavator, you're replacing new, a different period. So your availability goes up through the roof, then it starts deteriorating again. But it doesn't deteriorate as fast. So we did this back in 2013. At that point, Rodion had appeared, and we said, Guy, we're going to suck your brain dry. Then we're going to send you out to some more mines to go and take some more data to verify. And let's just build on this. So the first thing that he had the issue with was the same thing we've known for decades. Everyone calculates availability differently. So we set a standard calculation for availability. And when we had any doubt, we quizzed the maintenance manager until he was sick of seeing us, until he told us the truth. It was like putting the bright light on, tell us the truth. Are you counting coffee breaks here or here? And honestly, it was surprising where they were counting stuff. And we had to rewrite or recalculate their availabilities based on our definition so it was a level playing field. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been a level playing field. So we did take account of that. And this is the sort of data we pulled. This is examples of availability data. You can see we have placed all over the world. We had a lot of European data. We had some data from Australia, Latin America, US, we had one or two. There isn't too much in this sample set. There's a lot of coal. We had some iron ore, phosphate, uranium operations. And if you thought about hard enough, you see the number of machines. There's one machine, for example, in Latin America that has 17 excavators, and you probably know which one that is just because they have 17 excavators. You probably can figure some of these out. There's another one with 19 in coal. Well, we know which one that is. So there's ways you can figure out who was who if you really want to look at the data hard and fast. So we plotted this up. So we looked at distributions of availability, and for every hours of service point, I looked at the distribution, I took the mean value. Now, there was a little bit of scatter. Some of them were a narrow scatter, some of them quite wide, but we said, best we can do right now is just take the mean. So we took the mean. And we came up with what appears to be a trend. It appears to be a relationship. This is to about 85, 87% correlation, so there's a reasonable high confidence that this does exist. And we could see the availability deteriorating for the hydraulic excavator in the yellow, and for the red, we could see it deteriorating for the rope shovel. And it seems to hold very well. What was really interesting is, if I took the two relationships and compared them, the availability of the rope shovel is roughly twice that of the hydraulic excavator minus one, and then you multiply by 100 to give yourself the percent. We were floored when we saw this. And we've tried it independently with other excavators on mine sites where they have both machines running. And damn, it's close. It is really close. This gives us a little practical tool we can use right now to predict where we think our availability is going to be with so many hours. So we thought that was a reasonable thing to share. We then put that back into our original 2013 plot. And what it did was it took the 12%, and suddenly the availability difference went up another 8%. So it's now a 20% availability. That told me our original estimate was a little flawed because we only had a couple of machines we looked at. We had a much larger pool of machines to look at, and we had a better view. The actual production equivalent stayed the same, but the availability went through the roof by not quite 50%, not quite 100% increase, but it almost got there. We did the same thing with productivity. And productivity, again, you can see some real good trends. And as the life of an excavator, hydraulic excavator, deteriorates, we can see the rope shovel holds pretty constant. We know that. Rope shovels are production machines. Hydraulic excavators do other things. The reason that the hydraulic excavator drops off so significantly is it is going to do other stuff. It's not actually producing. It's fiddling around, taking care of rocks. It's walking around the mine site. We know it does that a lot. It's doing other things. And so that literally dropped the productivity because hydraulic excavators do travel. They do other stuff. So this actually fits. So in true productivity comparisons, these should probably be a lot closer. But overall, because the way we're using them, this is what they really are. So we apply that over 25 years. And this showed us every time we buy a new hydraulic excavator, when it comes close to life end, it jumps up again, and then it follows the same deterioration. But we get this difference between the rope and the hydraulic excavator. And that difference, that delta, is if we looked at nothing else, is primarily the dig cycle time. We take a lot more care with the hydraulic excavators in the face than we do with our rope shovels. We take our time, or we should be taking our time, to try and fill the bucket to get the fill factor up. And that's where the big difference is. There's a huge difference, and the seconds difference, going from, say, 45 to 48 seconds for a rope shovel up to about 60 seconds for a hydraulic excavator, those 12-second difference, 15-second difference, makes a huge difference over the life of the machine. And this is what it was doing. Maintenance costs, again, hydraulic excavators, just as we've seen in the original calculation back in 2013, there is a difference. These are exponential curves. They're almost linear, but they're not quite. They definitely take off. We don't have anything for hydraulic excavators beyond about 42,000 hours. We didn't have any data. It doesn't exist. It's hard to find that. Some excavators are lasting longer, but they're being held together by duct tape and baling twine. They're really not doing what they originally intended to do. So in terms of the comparisons, we thought that difference was a reasonable. And again, this was roughly about 200 different machines being evaluated in this database. So this is not just a few machines. This is machines worldwide, large, small, the whole works thrown into one. In terms of the comparing, the difference between the two, and here the costs for the hydraulic are obviously much bigger than the rope shovel, there's a lot more things to do. There's a lot more downtime. There's a lot more loss of availability as opposed to availability in this instance here. And that's literally the complexity. There is a lot more associated with the cost for parts and the time it takes, everything else. And it's really the complexity. Our rope shovels haven't really changed that much except for the electronic systems over the last 20 years. But what's changed on our hydraulic excavator has changed hugely in terms of how we're measuring, how we're diagnosing, how we're identifying. Those things have changed hugely. And so that complexity means your people have to be better trained. And this has actually slowed down the process that has added to the maintenance costs. So we threw that in. And what happens is the availability sticks around the 20%. But our actual costs drop. They come down to $53 million over a seven-year production equivalent. And so this is our final chart that shows what the difference was between all those relationships. And we're showing that after 25 years' life, our rope shovel has about 67% availability. And after each 7 to 9 cycle life, we're somewhere in the 85 to 87% availability associated with the hydraulic excavator. And you guys know that's true because you know how much time you're spending in the shop with your machines or out in the field in maintenance. This is the last thing we did with this data. We decided to take a look, and it looks a little confusing. It really isn't. So the two bottom curves, the rope shovel and the hydraulic excavator, are the relationship between the cost of maintenance and the availability. So you have a higher availability, which is actually on the left-hand side. We actually reversed this. So we went from higher to lower availability. So you drop off availability, this is what happens. If you go to the right, availability is decreasing. So if we look at this, if we had zero issues associated with cost, it means we have 100% availability. It's not costing us anything in maintenance, right? So no maintenance, no cost, right? 100% availability. And so we don't have those. So these dashed lines are theoretical. They don't exist. But this is where it would project to. And so this data is scattered. And you can see there is scattering. And it should be. There's a huge variability worldwide in terms of how things are maintained and how they're used. So, but we do see this trend, and it's actually a fairly simple relationship. What it comes down to is the difference in cost between the rope and the hydraulic at any time is about 5.5 times. That's what it's costing you between the two if you were to do a comparison, if you wanted to do an equipment selection process. If we look at the production, the productivity actually decreases with decreasing availability. That's obvious. The trends definitely show that. The maximum is this 1165. And you have to remember, this 1165 could vary depending on how much more data we get, but it's somewhere in that ballpark. And so what this is saying is if we had 100% availability, the most theoretical we could get to would be 1165 tons per meter cubed of bucket capacity. So we've put these in terms of if you have a 20 meter cube bucket, or you have a 30 meter cube bucket, or a 40 meter cube bucket, doesn't matter. The same graph will apply. You just multiply by your bucket capacity. And so this is where those ratings are. So we've normalized it so it can be used for any machine. So essentially, we have the rope shovel, we have the hydraulic excavator, and it's not the direct difference, it's the slope, the rate at which it changes. So the change here, it's the rate of change, the rate of drop, in terms of both production and availability, is 4 times for the hydraulic excavator as it is for the rope shovel. And that's really it. That's basically where we got to. So I thought at this point, this would be a really great tool. And I know, Steve, you're going to put this stuff available to people online so they can access it after the conference. This, I think, if you did anything, grab this picture, put it on a card, laminate it, give it to people, guys in the field, give it to your supervisors in the maintenance shop, and they can say, okay, we think we're somewhere around here. This is how we communicate between maintenance and operations. This is what this availability does. So they can see, if you don't get the machine back up, this is what it's going to do to the production. This is what it is in terms of our estimated cost per meter cubed of capacity. So this becomes a little bit of a planning tool. So this be useful maybe for your planners, for your schedulers, to understand literally what does it do to us if we don't do something to actually correct the problem. So for this part, and I was trying to hold 5 minutes if I could at the end. I'm not sure it's going to happen or not. Steve's going to chase me off. This was literally my conclusion. There are more questions to ask. I would love to get a larger database to see if we can still see this there. I believe we will. I think there's enough data there already to tell us what the trends are. But the questions should be coming from you guys, whether you're OEMs, service providers, or users. And I think that's really the answer to this. So my conclusion for this part was there are definitely more questions. And if we did get something that told us more, I'd be very happy to rework it, and we'll present it again in 2019, and we'll see where we are from there. Thank you very much. How are we doing?
That's amazing.
Am I on time?
You're ahead of schedule.
Can I have 2 more minutes?
Okay, 2 more minutes.
I'm ready to go. Steve's scared now because he knows I got another 20 slides. No, I don't. So this isn't the end of the story. So when we were doing this work, I said, you know something, the shovel is one thing. But we've just said that the specific energy is to do with the blast quality. Let's look and see if we can tie those two together. But that's not the end of it either. When the material goes from shovel to truck, the crusher's still got to accept it. How well does the crusher do? So what's the crusher able to accept? So the complete picture of this is shovels in the middle, blast quality up front, crusher performance at the end. And our whole goal, where we know our crushers are our highest energy drawer in the mine, they're the biggest energy drawer we have, it's the most expensive unit we have in the mine. If we can minimize energy for all three, then we're on a win. That's where I thought we should go next. So this is literally me saying, this is where I think we may be able to talk more in 2019 at the next haulage and loading. And so this is looking at our power draws, our voltage, our currents, which gives us our power, gives us our energy. The energy is the area under the curve. It's literally the time multiplied by the power gives us the energy. This is the power draw associated with the crusher. It has a very ragged look, just like a shovel does when it's digging, but it's for a different purpose. It's crushing the rock. It's all tensile breakage for the rock. And if we do look at the energy for any cycle for an excavator, this is the number of events that I've measured for a given excavator. This was for 3,500 different events for any one of these positions. So the air under the curve is 12.6 megajoules. This is the power drawn by a specific example excavator. If I know that energy, I can actually relate this to other things. So at the shovel end, if I really want to know what kills me, it's the downtime changing tips and adapters. That's where I'm seeing a lot of my time being drawn out when I'm not able to operate. And if we have a catastrophic failure on a lip, we're in trouble. So if I'm looking at my wear protection, one thing I sort of wanted to highlight for you guys, and I just want to ask this question. You guys all are aware of using Vickers for hardness for tools and adapters, wear surfaces. Did you know if you multiply the Vickers number by gravity, 9.81, it's actually a pressure. And a pressure is newtons per meter squared. Well, energy divided by volume loss is also newtons per meter squared. That's actually the definition, true definition of specific energy. So specific energy is a pressure unit. That's what it is. So if we knew the energy it took from the shovel, from here, for a cycle, if we knew how much metal we'd lost, just weighing a tip and adapter after wear, we knew how much time it's been in service, we can figure out what is the predicted time life for that tip and adapter. And maybe we can start talking about what kind of wear protection should we be using if whatever we got isn't working for us. So this allows us to maybe perhaps choose appropriate improved wear protection. So an example, and I'm not going to go through this, but this will be in the slides. You'll be able to look at this yourself and follow it. But essentially, using specific energy, I can predict what the actual metal loss would be on a tooth. And if I look what happened in the actual field, just by weighing it and using, 7,800 kilograms per meter cubed for steel, it's actually the same mass. This tells me I can predict what the wear loss is in the field for a given Vickers number for hard facing. So it allows you to choose a better hard facing material that will give you better life. So we thought that's something that might be worth looking at, and this is something we might talk about next time in 2019 as well. The other thing is dig force. Everyone talks about how much force it takes to break out. Well, you know something, if you have the speeds on, for example, a rope shovel, you have the energy underneath or the power draw associated with the rope shovel. Power divided by velocity gives you force. If you know the efficiency of the system, which isn't that difficult to calculate, and that's something that I might throw in as well that we could actually look at. The velocities are very predictable for a rope shovel. They're also very predictable when you're excavating with a hydraulic excavator. So you can come up with the forces very easily. And if you know the forces, you can relate that directly to the blast quality. And this is where I think there's a connection to blast quality. We know that high dig forces mean there's peak digging, it's poor quality blast, it's maybe some hard lumps, it's maybe some free digging that's giving us problems. The stuff in the middle is where we really want to be. This is just the variability in blast quality. And this is the loose stuff at the bottom of the pile. So toe, easy digging, hard digging. But we can relate those things together. The lower the force, the better fragmentation, the lower the dig resistance, the lower the specific energy, and the lower the ground engaging tool wear. So we can pull all these things off there. The other thing I noticed with excavators, and Steve's going to tell me to go away in a second, we don't know what actually happens inside a bucket. So I built a transparent bucket. And I ran it at the same trajectory as a rope shovel pulling through a face. Look what happens in the back end of that bucket, so up near the roof. There's a void space. And the void space stays there even when you fill the bucket. So when everyone says we're not getting good fill factor, and the bucket tips up and we see that void space at the back near the roof in the bucket that can be visibly seen, we've never seen it because we can't see through steel. It doesn't start at the top. It starts inside, and then it sloughs into the void as you tip up the bucket. You can't avoid it. So this tells us something's not quite right with the shape of the bucket to allow the flow into the material in. This happens with every single bucket we've tried, and we've done a number of different shapes. So this is stuff that actually helps us understand better why we're not getting the fill factor and why we're actually restricted to what we have. This is the most confusing I'm going to show you, and this is at the end of it. This is where I believe we can go in terms of looking at the size distribution of material coming out of a blast, looking where the crusher target needs to be at 80% passing, which is the rule to actually generate a bond work index to actually design a crusher. This is what the manufacturers, this is what Dave does when he was talking about his sizer. He is actually looking at this. He's looking at that 80% margin to figure out what size his crusher has to take. And then this here is the limit for an excavator. And the limit for an excavator is if you have a lump that's bigger than 1/3 the lip of your excavator bucket or your shovel dipper, it probably will get stuck. If you have pieces that are half the size, they will impinge, they won't pass through. 1/3 of the size is probably the maximum you should be targeting. You can have some oversize, but essentially you target that. I'm seeing this in this particular model here at about 86% passing. And that's 1/3 of the lip size of this particular ultra-class shovel that we looked at. We've still got oversize, there's still issues. So we can look at the bucket, the fragmentation we need for that. We can look at our powder factors, 0.45 kilograms per meter cubed. It's not bad. But there's costs associated with it. That's directly proportional to cost. So we can get our costs on our blast. We can look at the energy for this. We can look at the work energy for the shovel. We should be able to look at the work energy of the excavator. So in thinking forward to where we go next and what we might be thinking about moving into haulage and loading 2019 and what might come back if Steve ever invites me back to talk again, I don't know what the answers are. But I think it's something worth thinking about, and I think that's where we go next. Thanks very much, guys. Now I'll shut up.
Great job. Two for the price of one. Do we have any questions?
Anybody got any questions?
Yeah, but I didn't watch you for another 20 minutes. So I'll pick
we'll do it later.
Yeah. I'm not sure we need the microphone.
We're good? Okay, next presentation is the use of lighting technology on mobile equipment. On the schedule it says Tom Feldhusen, but he's not going to be here, and instead Joe Lord is going to make this presentation. Joe is the North American Sales Manager, Mining and Energy. He currently oversees all North American mining, lighting, sales, and distribution. He brings 4 years of technical lighting experience along with 4 years of retrofitting mining equipment, processing plants, conveyor systems, and other mining applications to LED. How about a warm welcome for Joe?